Okay, good morning. This is Kathy Kramer. It is Wednesday, July the 6th, 2016. And today I'm here with Joanne Johnson, conducting an interview of her memories of First Unitarian Church. So just to get us started, I'd like to, Joanne, if I could ask you a little bit about your background. About you were not born in Louisville.
No. No, I wasn't. I was born in East Chicago, Indiana. And my mother tells me it was a dark and stormy night. But I lived in northern Indiana then until I was 14, and then we moved to southern Illinois. Mm-hmm. And we had been going to a congregational church in Whiting, and when our minister found out we were going to be moving more southward, mm-hmm. he said, you know, you might want to look for a Unitarian church, because as you go further south, these churches seem to get further away from their national boards.
Oh.
And so he said, if they have a Unitarian church, you might enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
This was a congregational minister telling us this.
Wow.
So when we got to Alton, Illinois, we visited different churches with my parents, and then we visited the Unitarian church, and they had a red hot minister there,
mm-hmm.
whose name was Randall Hilton,
mm-hmm.
and he was really very good, and eventually left that church and went to Chicago as head of the Lincoln Center.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. So anyway, we enjoyed Randall Hilton, and I went to a summer camp at Lake Geneva one summer when I was 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, saw people like Homer Jack and Don, oh gosh, what was his name?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Really people that were very capable, mm-hmm. and known within the UU community.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so impressed.
Hmm.
And Homer Jack was in charge of the social responsibility,
mm-hmm.
program,
mm-hmm.
which I had attended.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, John Lewis was asking for a strike,
mm-hmm.
in the coal mines.
Oh.
And of course, my father was in management,
mm-hmm.
for his company,
mm-hmm.
and didn't have a great deal of sympathy for the unions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our group had sent a letter to the president saying, please listen,
mm-hmm.
you know, that these people have a cause and we are supporting it.
Right.
Well, when my father found out that I had signed such a thing, what are you doing? Were they brainwashing you, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I said, no. And, you know, I didn't say no to my father very much.
Very much, yeah.
Because, you know, if he told me the sky was magenta, I tell everybody in the whole world that,
yeah.
the sky was magenta because my dad said so.
Yeah, well, that must have been something.
So, and it was the first time I said, no, we weren't brainwashed. We felt it was the right thing to do.
And how old were you at the time?
Probably 15.
15, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I didn't disagree with him very often.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say, all the world is wrong but thee and me,
yeah.
and even thou art wrong at
times. Sometimes I worry about thee, yeah.
So anyway, it was a way that I wanted him to know that I wasn't being brainwashed, that
right.
we had all talked about this and thought about it and felt it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
that's where I got started.
With Unitarian. With and then you, how about your education? Did you, after
Well,
that?
I went to the University of Illinois after I finished high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated there in 51.
Mm-hmm.
My husband was going to Northwestern. He was from North Dakota. He'd gotten an NRTC scholarship to mm-hmm. Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
And we met through a mutual friend that I had, who also went to Northwestern. But mm-hmm. I sat next to this Bob for 4 years, well, 3 years in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted me to, he was dating my younger sister, and mm-hmm. he wanted me to go out with his friend that he was bringing home for Thanksgiving, and I rolled my eyes and said, oh no, you know, but I did go out with him, and we started writing letters, and
mm-hmm.
we got married after he graduated a week after I did. He went, you know, from Northwestern, and then he had his orders, and mm-hmm. we got married the week later
wow.
in Alton, in the Unitarian Church.
In the Unitarian Church.
Yes.
Oh.
And then we started our Navy days.
Navy days, and you lived out west, and
well,
while he was
yeah,
in the Navy.
We started in Bayonne, New Jersey,
where
he went to supply school for 3 months,
mm-hmm.
and then we went to San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
where he was on an escort carrier out of Vallejo,
mm-hmm.
and we were there for about a year and a half,
mm-hmm.
and then he got transferred to a destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
But the destroyer, though its home port was San Diego, was in dry dock at Mare Island.
Mm-hmm.
So we had 6 months.
Six whole months
together.
Uh-huh.
And then his destroyer was sent to Korea.
Oh.
And so he was gone for about 7 months. And that's during which time
mm-hmm.
our older son was born
mm-hmm.
in the Naval Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
And then after, where did you move back to Illinois after?
No, afterwards we went back. Well, we went back to North Dakota to visit my folks who had moved there. We got married.
Okay.
And visited his parents, and then we went to Northwestern
mm-hmm.
so he could visit their placement bureau.
Oh,
and say,
good.
Where are jobs available?
Need jobs, yeah.
And so at that time there was a lot of employment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people were needed
sure.
in a lot of places because it was still fairly soon after World War II. So
right.
They were building things like GE was now manufacturing things that hadn't been made during the war.
Yeah.
Refrigerators and
stoves.
Ranges, yes.
Yeah.
And so, yes. It was a busy time.
And that's how
Don
connected.
Found he was given a choice. There were three accounting jobs available
mm-hmm.
and that they were recommending
mm-hmm.
and he picked GE to come down to Louisville.
So he moved to Louisville with his first job with GE. It was his first job.
Well, you know, when he got out of school, he had a degree in accounting.
Mm-hmm.
He is in the Navy, and they're saying, forget what you learned about accounting. We're going to teach you the government system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he comes to GE, and they said, forget what you've learned about accounting. We're going to teach you the GE system. So he was adaptable.
He was adaptable.
Yes.
That's right. And as I recall, I'd heard that he was adaptable, that later on they trained him in computers.
He was asked to be on the auditing staff,
mm-hmm.
which my father thought was a terrible mistake for him not to accept that, because that's your first way to go up the ladder. And Don came home and he said, I don't know what to do. He said, they've offered me a job on the accounting staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what's the problem? And he said, they're away from home 80% of the time for the next 5 years.
Oh, that's right.
And I said, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. He said, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And I said, fine, don't do it.
Right.
Well, my father thought we were being very foolish.
Oh.
And I said, well, Don comes from a family that had no children, no other, he had no siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, he really values family.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, he doesn't want to be away,
mm-hmm.
you know, all that time.
That's a lot.
And so I said, and I don't want him to be away because I haven't seen him for 3 years.
Yeah, that's right. You just gone and, through that.
And so he had just finished this training program at GE, which was, mm-hmm. he'd been home for 3 years. I kind of liked that.
Yeah, yeah.
So soon after that, one of his managers came by and he said, are you interested in computers?
Mm-hmm.
And Don said, I don't know a thing about computers, but I'm willing to learn.
Good.
And they said, fine. And mm-hmm. that's when he started in where they had all these little connections to the UNIVAC they had.
Oh, the UNIVAC, okay.
And so he didn't work on the UNIVAC, but he had his own little,
mm-hmm.
well, I forget what they call them,
mm-hmm.
connection anyway,
mm-hmm.
and learned to program. And
meanwhile, your family was growing.
Meanwhile, the family was growing,
mm-hmm.
yes. Which
mm-hmm.
probably wouldn't have happened if he'd been on
the auditing
staff.
That's right. And so, when did you join First Unitarian Church?
Well, in the summer of 57,
mm-hmm.
we had been in Louisville about 3 years, and one of the neighbors wanted to take our child to Bible school,
mm-hmm.
and then he was like 3 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, this is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know I knew the person that wanted to take him.
Mm-hmm.
She was a neighbor,
mm-hmm.
but I thought, this is a church I don't know that much about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they teach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I want him to get information from them about
mm-hmm.
religious matters. I would prefer being the person to tell
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I told Don, I said, I think it's time for us to find our own church
mm-hmm.
to do what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started looking at churches then.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been brought up as a Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the Presbyterian and the Methodist and, mm-hmm. you know, and then I said, okay, time to look for the Unitarian. So I called and found out when they met and the time and all.
Mm-hmm.
And we went down and there was Robert Western pulpit.
Yeah.
And he was so articulate and so definitive in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we loved his sermon
mm-hmm.
when that first one we went to.
Mm-hmm.
We also loved the fact that George Gibson met us at the door
mm-hmm.
and greeted us. And then when we went back 2 weeks later, he was there greeting us saying, well, how nice to have the Johnsons back.
Oh, my.
Well, talk about being impressed.
Wow.
So, anyway, but we were also impressed with Robert Weston.
Mm-hmm. And you said that you were really impressed by his sermons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started this moral side of the news,
mm-hmm.
and he was on that. And we were impressed with his points of view. You know,
that was a TV show, right?
That was a TV show that started with Weston was on it. I think there was an Episcopalian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure who all. There were four, maybe five people on that
mm-hmm.
panel.
And they talked about...
But they discussed current events and other things. Sometimes it was theological, but many times it was just moral and ethical. He was very good.
And that was in the early 50, no, you said 57. That's right.
Well, 57, 58, and then things began. They hired an assistant for him. Mm-hmm. And we got to the point where we didn't have the money to really pay an assistant. Mm-hmm. He did not want us to fire somebody they had brought in to mm-hmm. work there, so he resigned mm-hmm. and went on to other things. And that's when we started a succession of ministers.
I see. 'Cause what was the church like in during Weston's time in terms of the current events that were happening?
I really was not all that conscious until Robert Weston's, when I was working in the office, Robert Weston sent a kind of a diary of his, what he had done in Louisville. Mm-hmm. And I read that, and mm-hmm. I told Richard was when I was working in the church, I said, this is something for the archives. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've read that stuff of his.
I think I have part of it.
But mm-hmm. it was, he mentions one of the parishioners in our church mm-hmm. who went to him and said, I know you think we should have more black people in our church. Mm-hmm. And she said, I know logically that you're right. Mm-hmm. But she said, I cannot sit next to these people.
Really?
I mean, in a social way, you mm-hmm. know. And he said to her, basically, you know, times are changing. Mm-hmm. And this may be something we all are going to be doing because it's the right thing to do. And mm-hmm. so he was ready for this, mm-hmm. and he was willing to participate. He just needed to convince some of his mm-hmm. people who considered themselves liberal mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. do it too.
And it was also happening elsewhere in Louisville. Other churches were dealing with this,
yeah.
and of course businesses and schools.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So there was. Did you get a sense that there were the Unitarian Church had company from other churches, or were the churches just kind of doing it on their own?
I think they were kind of doing it on their own. I don't remember an influx of anybody else, mm-hmm. you know, coming in, mm-hmm. and. It was a sense of unrest too, because people were having to face change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this, you know, has always been a good thing for many people.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it's frightening for some.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that that's right, but I mean, it is a frightening thing to say, I'm going to have to change how I feel or think,
mm-hmm.
do things.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you think that the church lost members?
Not really. I think our church has always been one where people come and go. A lot of people come to see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very wonderful couple who worked their tails off and then left. They said, we didn't know it was so hard to be a Unitarian because they were new, they were asked to do everything, and they
really?
Tried to do everything, and mm-hmm. you can't,
just
you know,
yeah.
you have to set your own limits.
In those days, what were church members doing for the church?
The same things pretty much that they're doing now.
Really? Mm-hmm.
They were, you know, greeting people.
Mm-hmm.
They were having luncheons. They mm-hmm. were having food fairs. They were having
committees.
Committees.
Committee
oh,
work.
Always a committee. Oh, Lordy be.
Mm. and taking care of the physical building.
And the physical part of the church,
yeah.
you know. Jess and
Oh, Jess Schreiber?
Jess Schreiber and what's his name? Mitchell.
Charlie.
Charlie Mitchell.
That's right, because he was...
Those two were the pillars of the church because they held the place up. I mean, they literally pushed the walls back up.
Literally.
Literally.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So that's normal for this church.
But they were workers. And they enjoyed one another, and I think they enjoyed, you know, accomplishing this positive thing. They put it back together, made it work.
Was this before the addition? Wasn't that around the time that the addition was built, Bro Hall and?
Well, that was before my time.
Was that before your time?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Because
they had the minister was over there by York Street in an office that is now part of
the social hall.
Social hall,
right? Yeah. And was there a program for the children?
Oh yes.
And how was that? And that's one.
And that was one of the things when I first joined the church. Nobody knew I was there for 3 years because I got asked to sit with the new babies.
Oh, is that what you did? Really?
And I was out of sight. Nobody knew I was in the church.
Oh, isn't that something? Oh, that far back. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Dorothy Schmidt was the director of RE at that time.
Sounds like, and it was a busy time for Louisville too, because it was right there at 4th and York.
4th and
since
York.
Since 1871.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you have any other memories that you'd like to share about Bob Weston or any of the volunteer work that you did during those early days?
Well, I think I've been on every committee in the church, maybe except finance, and that was because Don
was there,
involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I'm not crazy about dealing with figures and numbers and all. But
so you were closely with Bob Weston then?
Well, I didn't work with him so much as I was on committees.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I was on the RE committee at least 3 times during my tenure there. I was on the worship committee. I was on the one, I don't know what they called it, that greets everybody and all, you know, did
greeters,
ushering.
Ushers.
And all that kind of stuff. There was always something to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not working when I first was in the church, so I would go down when I could find a babysitter during the day. I'd get down to the Women's Alliance, which met in the mornings, and they had an evening alliance also. But that was harder for me to do because I had a husband coming home for supper and 4 kids to feed and so forth. So it was not an easy time to get out of the house, and I could manage in the morning because some of the kids were in school and my neighbor and I would switch babysitting back and forth. So that worked out.
So that worked out.
Yeah.
What sort of things were the Women's Alliance, was the Women's Alliance doing in those days?
Well, they used to have what they called a silver tea, and that was to raise money, I think, for the Goodwill. I'm not I think that's what it was. And they would provide things for the church if they needed a new chair up on the platform. You know, they would provide the money for that.
By fundraising activities?
Yeah, fundraising. They would have, well, I don't remember all the things they did because I wasn't all that active in it. I mean, I went to some of the meetings. And
in the morning, during the day.
But they were kind of a the backbone of providing for needs in the church.
And so they did activities for the church and also for the community. Well, that's very interesting. So it seems like, and I don't have the dates for Bob Weston before me, but in front of me, but he was there for quite a while.
Well, no, he left in the early, either the late 50s or early 60s, because that's when they did, however, have a fund drive for raising money to buy the property for TJ.
Oh, that's right. You were there for that.
Yeah, that's right. It was one of the first things that, I mean, we joined the church in 57. I think it might have been 59 when they had a capital fund drive. To get money to buy that property.
And they, it's my understanding that some members had dual memberships.
That's true. Well, they needed some strong families to go out and start, you know, being part of the settlement group, so to speak. And so there were families like the Lewises, Charlie and Ruthie Lewis, and others that helped.
The Fowlers?
Catherine Brown, the Fowlers,
And the Donnellys, didn't they?
They might, I don't know. They were at First Church all the time, I remember, but that doesn't, who knows what my memory is, including at this point.
I know, and I'm mixing up the news, what I read. And they had to build a building, right?
Yeah, they had to hire an architect and build a building and do the whole shebang.
And then hire a minister and everything.
Well, they didn't have a minister for a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but then they did.
Well, Unitarians do work.
Well, they had lay people for a while and visiting ministers and, you know.
And that's sort of part of
Then they got their own.
Now, the other ministers, would you care to say anything about some of the other ministers that you knew? For example, there's Philip Smith, David Brown, Bob Reed.
Well,
and they don't have, it can be anything.
Philip Smith was not there all that long. And then we got David Brown, who was a very decent person and a good minister, young, and he died early. And so that was kind of a blow because we all liked him pretty well. And then, let's see, Weston. Then Bob Reed came. And I have a lot to thank Bob Reed for. I told you the first 3 years I was in the church, nobody knew me because I wasn't in church. I was taking care of the kids. And I was on various committees, but, you know, I wasn't making a huge impression, I don't think. But when Bob Reed was minister, we had a difference one time when the RE director announced that there were no graduating seniors that year. Well, sitting beside me were my daughter, who was graduating, and her best friend from church, who was graduating, and they had volunteered for 3 years taking care of the toddlers while the parents went to forum. And they had done this with no pay. That was their contribution to the church. But when she announced that there were no graduating seniors, I stood up in the middle of church and said, I beg your pardon. Mm-hmm. We have two right here who have volunteered for the last 3 years to babysit with the little children while their parents came to the forum.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think they need to be recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And they were.
Good.
But after church, I fussed at Bob Reed.
Yeah.
I said, this is the reason
mm-hmm.
kids grow up in this church and don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I said,
So there were activity. The children were there, but they were overlooked.
Well, there was really...
That's fine. We can change the subject.
Okay.
That's fine.
Well,
I'll tell
you about that later.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
But anyway,
you had a conversation with Bob.
I had a conversation with Bob about that.
Uh-huh.
But later on, he was having a problem with one of the employees.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to me. I was working in South Louisville at the ministries at the time.
Okay.
And he came out to visit me.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a black woman who lived above my office
mm-hmm.
in the same building.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of my protector.
Mm-hmm.
She took it upon herself to make sure I was safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she saw this man she didn't know come into my office and not pop right out, she came from across the street. She'd been over visiting a friend, and she came across the street and she knocked on the door. And I went and I said, well, hi, you know, how are you doing? And she said, just came to say hello. And she said, oh, you have a visitor. She knew I had a visitor.
Yeah.
And I introduced her to Bob. I said, this is my pastor. This
mm-hmm.
is my minister.
And uh-huh.
So she was okay with that.
Yeah.
And she, oh, well, I'll talk to you later. And I said, thank you.
Uh-huh.
But Bob had come out to ask me if I was interested in working at the church.
Oh.
And I said, doing what?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, he would like somebody to be kind of in charge of the office
mm-hmm.
and to make sure that when stuff came in to be done,
mm-hmm.
that it got done and returned to whoever asked for it
mm-hmm.
and that kind of thing. And I said, well, I just didn't know,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I was the right person for that. And he said, are you willing to give it a shot? And
mm-hmm.
I said, sure.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And this was in the 70s?
Oh, this was
because he came in 68, in the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Probably, right, well, shortly before he left, because he left that summer of 85.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know he was going to be leaving, but he knew what I think.
Yes, he was planning.
Anyway,
mm-hmm.
But this was in the spring, and I was planning to leave the ministries anyway because they were
mm-hmm.
They were having problems getting grant money and
mm-hmm.
so forth. So
mm-hmm.
I, you know, I thought I'm not driving over here for a 2-hour day or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that summer I did start working at the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then he announced he was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter and her friend decided they were going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And so the last thing Bob did, he on the Friday before he left, was to marry my daughter and her husband. And that was the last wedding in the church.
Oh.
And it was very informal wedding. She was, you know, wearing a street-length dress
right.
and so forth. But anyway. And
was there a staff there already? Were you additional staff?
I was part of the staff, and there was one other person, and then that person left,
mm-hmm.
and we had to hire another one. And so we went through a process of, you know, advertising and interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Greenfield, I think was his name.
Mm-hmm.
Was on the committee to help interview and all.
Oh.
And that's when we hired Marge Warden.
Oh, so what year did you...
That was 1985.
So she started in 1985.
Yes.
She had just started before the fire.
Yes. That was just before the fire, which was in December.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
It's amazing.
And Steve, he lived on the premises there at what was Haywood House. Mm-hmm. And he called me, and it was, you know, the middle of the night.
Oh,
and
fire.
He said, I think you should know that the church is on fire. And I said, oh, my God, you know. And I said, you called the fire department. He said, oh, yes, they're here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was freezing cold, and the water was just about frozen when it came out of the hoses. But he said, you know, I think they've got it under control. Mm. And I said, well, then I'll come down in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no point in my standing there watching them pour water on this place.
Right.
Well, it turned out it wasn't under control.
No.
And they didn't realize that there were lines under the church. And then when that air went up, it was just like poof.
Yeah.
And... Yeah. Anyway, I went down in the morning. Of course, everything was just gone. Mm-hmm. And one of the people in the church, and I said it was kind of an odd couple there, but we were both crying, both hugging one another.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
I can't imagine how that felt.
It was not a happy reunion, but we were kind of hanging on to each other,
yeah.
Each other, just because we didn't want to stand alone.
So people started showing up the next day?
Well, that day, all that day, and of course that night, Penny was the president of the board at the time, but we thought she was out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him to call John...
Lauterbach.
Mm-hmm. Because... he was vice president, and he went down there, and I guess most of the people who were down there that night were over at the 600 drinking coffee, because it was
freezing out there.
Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those horrific things that you can't stop, you can't...
No, you're stunned.
It was happening. And
because it was still smoldering the next day.
Oh, yes, yes, it was. And so it was not a happy thought. Well, of course, we had an interim minister at that point who had come after Bob left. And that was a hard blow for her too, because she thought she was in this nice established church, you know, and going to do this and this, and she found out that she had to rebuild a church. And so then that, I don't know if that, it was like on a Friday night, was Saturday, and Sister Eileen offered the use of the...
The next day.
Yeah, the auditorium.
And it was Nazareth College then, Sister Eileen Egan was the president.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you all met.
So we all got to meet in, I think it was the auditorium across the street first, and then they offered us their auditorium on that side of the street. So, but anyway, we met there, and of course, we were using Haywood House as a Sunday school for classes there, and the parents were over at the church, and they were uneasy about that.
Yeah, sure.
And so then the offer came from the church in the West End saying, we have an empty church if you're interested in meeting here. And what they found out was that the furnace didn't work there.
Either, yeah.
And so...
Yeah, furnace problems, yeah.
So they said, in lieu of rent, if you get the furnace replaced or fixed, why, you can have this place. And so that's what they did. They got the furnace replaced.
And after the fire, it seems like all the meetings started, the cottage meetings and
Cottage meetings, some of them met at McDonald's on Second Street.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Second and Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them met in homes.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them met in the library.
Oh, the public library across the street.
Yeah,
right.
The meeting rooms there. And
there was a building committee.
Oh, the building committee was fantastic, the work they put in. And what everybody advised,
mm-hmm.
Grayson
Tucker.
Tucker came, and of course he was not a Unitarian at that point,
mm-hmm.
but his advice was do not do anything in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Think about this.
Mm-hmm.
You've got time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, you're going to be sorry because you're going to put together too fast.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to try to repeat what you had.
Mm-hmm.
You need to think about what you want for the future.
Okay.
And so it was very good advice.
Mm-hmm.
And the building committee listened, and
mm-hmm.
they took their time. They thought about what they were going to do.
And they had to go through creating the committees and the fund following the tenets of Unitarianism. It had to come from the congregation.
Yes.
The congregation
had
to vote on everything.
Yeah.
To get these core committees
They wanted
started.
To make sure there weren't going to be people saying we were not heard.
Yeah, right.
And so they wanted everybody to have
mm-hmm.
input,
mm-hmm.
and they listened.
Yeah.
And I am just amazed
mm-hmm.
at
I am
the
too.
Remarkable job they did.
Mm-hmm.
And there might have been a few glitches here and there, but
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
I think for what they were going through, the emotional upheaval
mm-hmm.
and the physical strain
mm-hmm.
and whatever,
mm.
I think they did a wonderful job.
Keeping track of over $2 million in insurance money.
Yeah.
And that was, I saw Don's name there and Eric Takow, Frank Slesnick, although he was later, and keeping track of that. And the note, all of the communication among the different committees.
Yeah, it was, and you know, I don't know who was doing all the juggling, whether it was the board members or the
mm-hmm.
the minister, I'm sure had some input
mm-hmm.
there,
mm-hmm.
and our interim minister,
mm-hmm.
and it was a
amazing
traumatic time.
And it seemed like you didn't miss any services. I mean, you still had services.
No, we had services up the street for a number of months.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got possession of the other church,
mm-hmm.
we went out there. One family, we do not want to go down there. We won't go down there, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, who was there every week?
That family.
That family. They came. They couldn't stay away.
Oh, isn't that something?
Yeah.
And you were on these. Now, you were busy with kids. Did you have, or no, were your kids older?
My kids were a little older by that time.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about 85.
85. And you had just started working at the church.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
Well, it was kind of different. It was like for organization things. And I will never forget Bob Reed, before he left, he had put something down in my to-do list on this book. There had been no organization until I got there.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, maybe there was before, but when I got there, the person in charge had, if something came in, it might get done, it might not get done, and so forth. And so I put a book out there, and I said, if it's not written in the book, it won't get done.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me in church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would go to church.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, can you do that? No, if it's not in the book, I won't do it.
Now, where would you leave the book so people
in
could get
office.
To?
In the office. The office was open.
And so people could go in and
they
write it
go
in the
in
book.
And write it in the book.
Okay.
And so Bob Reed one time put something in there, ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had some other things I had to do, so I did those first.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to know if that was done yet. And I said, no. He said, what do you think ASAP means? And I said, as soon as possible, but it hasn't been possible.
Yeah, it hasn't been possible.
And he just shook his head.
It hasn't been possible. Oh.
Oh, my.
And you
live
had,
and learn.
You had to move the office from...
Well, we moved the office from the church where it had been,
yeah,
out to the West End.
Uh-huh.
But... You know, I said we'd hired Marge.
Yeah.
Well, Marge and I discovered that we both, she said something, I live so far out, you know.
Yeah.
I said, well, where do you live? And
yeah,
she told me she lived in Fern Creek. And I said, you live 3 miles from me. And she said, really? And I said, we could probably take turns driving. And
yeah,
that way neither one of us has to go every day the whole way, you know.
Right,
or
right.
We could do it 1 week at a time and you do it the next week or whatever. So that's what we did.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I found out she was from North Dakota.
Oh.
And I said, oh, I said, that's where my husband's from. She said, oh, where's he from? And I said, Jamestown. And I said, where are you from? And she said, a little town near near Dickinson.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, a little town near Dickinson, that could be 1,000 little farm towns. I
right.
said, what's the name of it? And she said, Richardton.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, that's where the Abbey is. And she about drove off the road. She said, you know where the Abbey is? And so that's another story. But
well,
anyway, she had gone to church, and Father Amandus was her priest.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became a bishop, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to come into Bismarck, which
mm-hmm.
was the capital, and have business with the Catholic Church priests there.
Mm-hmm.
And so Father Amandus found out that my father had a wonderful collection of rocks.
Oh.
And gems and so forth. And so he called my dad one day and said, would you let me look at those sometime? And Dad said, sure, come anytime. Well, he said, what about today? And Dad said, fine.
Mm-hmm.
So he came over. They got to be good friends.
Hmm.
And my dad found out that Brother Victor out at the Abbey had bookbinding skills. He could rebind some of his old books
mm-hmm.
that were falling apart. And so he did. And Marge is saying, you know Brother Victor? I said, no, I don't know them. My dad knows
mm-hmm.
them.
Isn't that something?
But anyway, so I had to really dig it out of her. That
yeah.
She was, so I said, well, was everybody in that town Catholic? And she said, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She said, if you weren't Catholic, you didn't live in Richardton.
Isn't that something?
Isn't that amazing?
And so you were new to the staff. She was new to the staff. You had an interim minister, and you were searching for unsettled. And meanwhile, the church burns down.
Yes. And
geez.
We had a RE director, though, that was,
mm-hmm.
and she and I were probably the only people, you know, that knew the church.
You provided some continuity.
Yeah.
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 Right, because yeah. then
but,
you had to make arrangements to move everything, what was, try to salvage things.
Well, there was nothing to salvage.
No, but the records were all, where yeah. were the records? Were they in the office in different rooms?
I think,
or?
I'm not even sure where they were,
mm-hmm.
But there was nothing from the church left.
Left, gosh.
There were, I mean, we couldn't move. They went through the hymn books,
mm-hmm.
and there weren't enough to salvage.
Mm.
I mean, it was just like, we need new hymn books.
Yeah.
And they went through music. The people who were singing in the choir, and I was singing in the choir at the time,
mm-hmm.
Got together with Terry Borney, and we went through all the music, what can we salvage, what can't we salvage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
do we need to replace this, or is this something we never sang anyway, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
So all that stuff was going on.
Did you and Marge, did you communicate with the contractors and the construction workers, or was that?
No.
That was a
no,
different
No, that
group.
Was the building committee.
The building committee, okay.
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
all, you were...
Because we yeah. were just trying to keep records of, you know, who is in our congregation.
Right.
Telephone numbers.
Right.
If any new people came to visit while we were in that church,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
follow-ups on that. But it was mm-hmm. it was mostly
church
business
work.
As usual.
Business as usual.
Yeah.
And then there were also lots of gifts that came in.
Many gifts and many thank you notes to mm-hmm. be written. And I think I wrote 59.
Mm-hmm.
We got a congregation here in Louisville from a Lutheran church
mm-hmm.
sent us their gift of a day's contributions, and I don't know, $185.49
mm-hmm.
or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these were gifts from people who were giving from their hearts.
Isn't that something?
Yes.
All different kinds of faith
All
traditions,
different kinds.
Too.
We
yeah.
got some from the nuns
yeah.
at Sacred Heart.
Mm-hmm.
We got some gifts from all kinds of people,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you might not expect.
People who had been to the church one time.
Maybe.
Yeah, I remember
or,
seeing a note
yeah.
like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody had... They'd gotten married there.
Yeah,
they weren't
yeah.
members, they weren't Unitarians, but
yeah,
they'd gotten married
But they
there.
Were married there because
yeah.
they couldn't get married somewhere else,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
So,
it
yeah.
was, and so you wrote all the thank you notes.
And I wrote thank you notes by the dozen.
Oh.
It was remarkable. And to this day, when I read about a church burning,
mm-hmm.
I send a small contribution.
Yep.
Because I know what it means,
mm.
you know.
Mm. There were so many letters and cards and donations from other Unitarian churches in
yes.
the United States, all
other,
over.
Other Unitarian churches, people that didn't identify, they just sent a check.
Right, right. It's incredible.
And yeah, it was
mm-hmm.
incredible and badly needed, because those were the things that we could use the money for, the songbooks
yeah,
or the
sure.
new music or
the kitchen
yeah well it, I think some of the stuff in the kitchen may have been covered by the insurance
but yeah
but still, you know, there anytime you're starting over
there are
all these things. And just for RE, you
mm-hmm.
know, manila paper.
Yeah.
And crayons. And pencils and
mm-hmm.
markers. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you think about it, it's just.
Because you, it was December the 13th. It was December the 14th, I
14th.
Think. Early
yeah.
in the morning when the fire was. And then in the dedication was in September of 89.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
But it needed, and that's what Grayson said, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you need this time
right.
to make sure that you aren't just trying to imitate what you've already had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to think about what you want for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And
those
he was very wise.
Yes.
And afterwards, he joined the church.
Ah, yeah. And to think that the decisions in those days, whether to stay downtown, because a lot of churches were moving to the suburbs.
That was the vote that they took right away, and there was no question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was
going to stay right there.
Yeah.
And then whether to keep or utilize the remaining structures into the design.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that it happened, and it was great.
Mm-hmm. It's an unusual. It's a wonderful story. Now you had, just a few minutes ago, you mentioned your work, this is more about you than the church, but sort of, it's both. You work for the, you said a ministry?
South Louisville Ministries.
Okay. Now, you were not living in South Louisville at the time.
No.
Okay. Tell me about
that. They were looking for somebody basically to do outreach for the ministries, and it was community organization again. And so I would walk the streets. I would talk to the people. I talked to the business people. We started their business association.
Really?
And I wasn't in charge of it. I mean, they had their own, but it was getting people together to meet and decide that that's what they wanted to do. And so that was part of what I was doing. And
were they just starting South Louisville Community Ministries?
No, or? They weren't just starting the ministries, but they were located further south, south of the Downs. And I was in an area of mostly from the Downs up to Algonquin Parkway.
Oh, over there, okay.
And so it was really trying to let them know what services were available. And we also had neighborhood meetings there, and they elected their own officers and so forth. We had a food co-op that worked out of the office I was in. And once a month, I went out with another person. We'd take somebody from the group, and we'd go out and buy the vegetables and stuff that people wanted from the produce mark, and we'd bring them back, and there were volunteers there to put them in bags according to what people had ordered.
Really?
Yeah, so that was...
Did you go, and how did you meet people? Did you, you said you did outreach. Did you go to their homes or knock on their
doors? I would
walk
down the street and talk to them if I met them on the street. I sometimes knocked on doors, sometimes, you know,
that's how you met them.
Just how I met them.
And you were
encouraged them to come to the meetings, you know, the neighborhood meetings. So.
And do you feel like there was any kind of an overlap between the your reasons, your personal reasons for doing that kind of work, with what you were hearing at church, or was it parallel, or? Kind of an awkward question.
Yeah, I wasn't doing it because I was a Unitarian, but on the other hand, one gets to spread the word sometimes. At one of the days, there was a woman who used to come and help, you know, fill the bags when they we got back and all. And we were sitting there talking, and she belonged to the Ninth and O Church, which at that time was on
Taylor Boulevard. Yeah, 9th and O.
Okay, now it's just down the street on Breckenridge Lane.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
From where we used to live.
Right.
Anyway, I was talking with her one day, and she said, "Oh, what really worries me are these humanists." And she said, "I don't know, you know, the Lord's going to have to take care of them or something." And what's the word? I'm trying to think of a... anyway, she was concerned because she thought they were all going to the devil.
Yeah.
And I just looked at her and I thought, you know, enough is enough.
Yeah.
And I said, "You know, Kate," I said, "I am one of those people." I said, "Would you care to look for my horns?" And she said, "Oh," like this, you know. I said, "I have been a Unitarian most of my life." And I said, "We are not bad people. We may not believe the same things you do as far as the divinity of Christ or whatever, but I said, we are not bad people. We're trying to help one another. We're trying to love people in this world. We're trying to do good things.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know who tells you that we have horns and are going to the devil, but I said, I don't have horns.
Mm-hmm.
Do I?
Mm-hmm.
I said, have you found them? And she just,
oh,
she could not believe that mm-hmm. I was one of these awful people.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Well,
but I thought, you know, most people I wouldn't bother with, but
yeah.
She was so concerned.
Yeah.
And I thought, mm-hmm. You need to know.
Yeah.
You know, you
just,
need
and
to
then
know
we'll,
that what
then,
you hear from your pastor is not necessarily true.
And then you move on.
Uh-huh.
And then you move on.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned, were there other church-related activities that you did mm-hmm. that had to do with community organizing?
Not really. Because when you do it in your job, I did that in the mental health center.
And now what did you do there at the mental health center?
I did outreach and education.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically community organization.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with ministers in the area.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with principals.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with counselors in
mm-hmm.
the schools. Talk to business people,
mm-hmm.
and we formed a committee because when I was asking them, what do you think are the worst problems in this area?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was telling me drugs. Now, we're talking about the time from 72 to 80.
Really?
When I worked there.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody was saying drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I got this bunch of people together, and there were a couple of principals, mostly counselors from the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Principals don't have time to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And there were ministers
mm-hmm.
of all kinds that
mm-hmm.
came.
Mm-hmm.
There was the publisher of the St. Matthew's newspaper, who
mm-hmm.
happened to be a member of our church.
Hmm.
So he was happy to be in on this scoop, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, he was there. There was the chief of police from the St. Matthew's police.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a group of about 12 people,
mm-hmm.
all of whom were movers and doers in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we met, we got bakery goods from the bakery in St. Matthew's.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor owned it.
Oh.
And he would mm-hmm. send goodies for us.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and when all was said and done, you know, they were talking about, what do we do about this problem with drugs?
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided they would like to do a survey in the area,
mm-hmm.
in the schools,
mm-hmm.
to do the survey within the school, all the schools, public, Catholic, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did make those arrangements, and we had a group. Ron Holmes was in charge of...
Oh, from U of L.
From U of L.
Sure.
And he saw to it... Well, he wasn't at U of L at the time.
Yeah.
He was at the technical school.
Okay.
First, but
mm-hmm.
that's where I met him.
Yeah.
And he got his students to help... You know, they were going to help distribute the surveys and all this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then he knew the people at Prather Institute over in Indiana
mm-hmm.
who could put it on, you know, could decode it for us and
interpret it
yeah. and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was taken care of. Everything was ready to go, and our superintendent of schools called a meeting, and including people from our committee,
mm-hmm.
saying, we don't think this is the way to do this. And our representative from the board, we don't think this is the way to do this. Mm-hmm. I was getting madder by the minute, mm-hmm. you know.
All that work.
I mean, we were not going to disclose school by school mm-hmm. what they were doing or how many did it.
You know,
we're doing this as a community.
Right.
And so when I kept hearing this, and it was like, and Bruce Van Dusen, the publisher of the paper, was there. He was ready to mm-hmm. shoot somebody, I think. Uh-huh. And so I just looked at Mr. Van Hoos and I said, you know, I said, you keep telling me this is not the way to do it. Mm-hmm. I would really like to know what you think is the way to do it.
Yeah.
I said, we thought this out very carefully. We've got professional people here. Mm-hmm. We have ministers. We have school counselors. Mm-hmm. And I said, we thought we had done a good job mm-hmm. of making this a community effort. Mm-hmm. And I said, now you're telling us this isn't the way to do this. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would appreciate within the next few days hearing your way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, meanwhile, he had called my boss, who was Butch Roppel, who was in charge of mm-hmm. community relations for, mm-hmm. well, it started out one thing, but it became seven counties. Mm-hmm. And so he had called him and wanted to know what I was doing and, you know, who is this woman and why is she interfering and mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he asked me for a report, which I wrote in two sequels. Mm-hmm. And anyway, he told Mr. Van Hoos, she's just doing her job.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that was the end of that. Mm-hmm. And about 2 days later, we get word from Butch Roppel that Mr. Van Hoos said we could go ahead and do this.
Oh, that's great.
Now, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll never know what changed things. But anyway, we did the survey.
Did the survey.
And the whole thing was kind of an anticlimax.
Oh, was it?
Because it turns out that most of the kids reported their drug of choice was alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
It was available.
It was
in their homes.
In their homes, yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. so this was what our conclusion was. Most of these kids in the East End, because that was my catchment area, said their drug of choice was alcohol. Now, a few people had, you know, marijuana or something, but I mean, the big bulk of it was
alcohol.
And guess what the parents said?
What'd they say?
Oh, thank God.
Oh, my gosh. And to this day, it's still a problem. Oh, yeah.
I thought, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you had solid information.
We had
solid information. It had all been done right. So you had, so that was your experience with the mental health center then, was it called?
Yeah, they were called, well, it started out as River Region.
River Region, I remember
then
that.
Then it was, became seven counties.
So you were working for River Region.
I was working for River Region, and then it became seven counties.
But, and then before that, you'd work for the South Louisville Community Ministries?
No, that was after that.
After that,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, after that, I worked for South Louisville Community Ministries.
And while you were doing that, you were also active in the church?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't as, I mean, I sang in the choir, and I did what I could do in between, but yeah, I couldn't do it all.
Well, did you put more hours in during the church rebuilding?
I don't know if I put more hours in. I put a lot of hours in, but you know.
You were still doing the work of the church while the church was being rebuilt.
Yeah. And I had a family to raise.
And you had a family to raise. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I'm willing to sacrifice, but I'm not going to put my kids on the altar.
No, no, no. That was your main work. That was your most important work, yeah, were your children. Do you recall any social justice issues during Bob Reed's stay at the church?
Yes, he was very involved in helping people who were conscientious objectors to mm-hmm. the war
mm-hmm.
and the Vietnam thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a counseling service for that.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked behind the scenes a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, here I am,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But he did a lot of that kind of thing. And I think after Weston left, the moral side of the news, they kept it up for a while, but it wasn't the same. And
mm-hmm.
by the time Bob got here, I don't think he was on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't quite, it didn't have quite the spring of the original one, because there were more differences
right.
in that first group.
Right. Right.
And afterwards it became like everybody's a good Christian.
That's right. And then Richard came on.
Then Richard came on, and I offered him my resignation because I felt like every minister should have his own person
mm-hmm.
To work with. And he said he really didn't think he could interview new people at that time, and would I stay on for a while anyway until
mm-hmm.
he made up his mind. Well, I stayed on till, let's see, they had a money crisis at the church. Marge was needing a full-time job
mm-hmm.
as compared, we were both working part-time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, I don't need to be here anymore, because she was very competent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to Richard and I told him, you know, they're having this money problem. Marge needs the money more than I do at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think it would be really good if you could keep her on, because
mm-hmm.
she's got skills that I don't have. She could do all that computer stuff. She got some lessons from Don,
mm-hmm.
but she was willing to learn.
Yeah, right.
And she did learn. And so, and financial stuff, you know, she wasn't used to that.
Mm-hmm.
She did all of that because she went on her own
mm-hmm.
and took an accounting course.
Oh, she did.
And Don said, build a church. They should pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, no, she didn't want to do that.
Oh, my gosh. Mm.
So, yeah, they were getting two for one with her.
And so she worked the whole time with while Richard was there.
Yes, she was there. And I think she retired about the time he did.
Yeah.
Left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But she had been there a long time.
Yeah, she had. Wow, what years?
She was was it 2000 when she left?
2000, yes.
I think so. So she was
David
there for 15...
Yeah, I think even maybe 2001.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
15 or 16 years.
She was there, must have been there during some of the interim. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Particular events, social community works, civil rights, social justice, or anything stand out particularly to you during Richard's time?
Well, Richard did get involved with the black ministers
mm-hmm.
and they started meeting regularly. I don't know if they met before or not, but
mm-hmm.
anyway, they were meeting in our church
mm-hmm.
and Richard really wanted to be involved in
mm-hmm.
civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that there was any particular mm-hmm. time in that period when he could, mm-hmm. you know, sprout his wings and say, yay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he was always interested and he was talking mm-hmm. with people
mm-hmm.
About, you know, what we could do to right. help and so forth. And I don't remember any call to march mm-hmm. or, mm-hmm. you know, we did march for some things,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
there were things going on at that time, different things.
Yeah.
And that reminds me, I meant to ask you, you mentioned the forums. This is back.
This was back before the church burned.
Yes. And now what were they?
Well, between 10 and 11,
mm-hmm.
we would have speakers come in.
Mm-hmm.
We would have, it was mostly speakers, but, you know, people involved in current events and mm-hmm. current situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it hadn't been done other places too much, but once we started, a lot of churches started.
Really?
Uh-huh. That.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it was, it was another way of getting information mm-hmm. to people other than the minister.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was perceived. It was a way to have a conversation about something that was, you were getting it from someplace other than the ministry.
Yeah, you're getting it from a community organization or a an individual who was working in this area and wanting, mm-hmm. you know, and
mm-hmm.
they had, I can't give you examples because I went to a lot and mm-hmm. I missed a lot.
Was the attendance pretty good?
Yes, mm-hmm. It was very good.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is there anything that you'd like to share about the church and about the church in recent memory that you'd like to share? Is there anything?
Well, in recent years, well, Dawn's been here, what, is this her sixth year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time flies.
I know.
I don't know.
I'd like to ask you about one big person that we haven't talked about is your husband. I would like to go on record about all the work that he did at the church, because his name pops up quite
well,
a bit.
Well, over the years, when they found out that he had been a trained accountant, that was the first thing they wanted him for, was treasurer.
He did that for a long time.
And on and off for about 11 years, I think. Not consecutively, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. on and off, he was mm-hmm. treasurer of the church many times.
Very important. Very important.
And he was very meticulous.
Mm-hmm.
And it really bothered him when he saw things weren't being done
mm-hmm.
like he would have done them.
Right, right.
But a lot of these people were not trained accountants.
Right.
They didn't know.
It's probably to his credit that the church is still there.
Well, I know when Claudia was treasurer,
mm-hmm.
she told...
Oh, she was?
At one time.
Oh, really?
And she said, she came to Don, she said, I don't know anything. I don't know credit from an S.
Yeah.
You know, debit.
Yeah.
And so he said, if you have questions, I'll be glad to help. And she did ask questions, mm-hmm. and he did help.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were others who thought they didn't need to ask questions,
mm-hmm.
should have asked mm-hmm. questions,
mm-hmm.
and Don said, well, if they don't ask, I can't shove it down their throat.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, but...
Well, that, as I said, I think that's one reason why the church is still there.
Well, he and Eric, twice, after Marge left, twice, they went down to redo the books because they had not been kept for months.
And that's something that has to be kept up.
Well, you have to keep it current so that people know who owes what and what's been paid and what are your debts. One of the people who went into the office after Marge left cleaned out the files, threw away all these folders that had contracts and stuff like that. So they went to look for the contracts. They'd call Marge, where are they? She said they were in the metal file in my office. They weren't there. You know.
Well,
and some people just didn't think that was important. Well,
it is important.
It's maybe not important to them, but it's
important to the church.
Important to the church, yeah.
Well, I think I've asked all my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Did I forget anything?
Well, I would like to add that Bob Reed asking me to work in the office was what made me know people better. People would call the office, and maybe, well, we had a interim minister who often was playing tennis when people called, and I'd say, she isn't in the office right now, may I take a message? Well, and then they pour out these stories. Well, I used to listen to the stories, and you know, I wasn't giving advice or anything else. I was just listening. But they'd get through and say, oh, thanks for listening, you know, and be gone. Well, John Lauterbach came in one time, and he said, I think we should do a time study test or something here. He said, you spend too much time on the phone. And I said, really? I said, well, what are you going to tell people when they call you and they tell you they have a problem and they want to talk about it? I said, am I supposed to slam the phone down and say, I'm sorry, John Lauterbach only allows me to speak to you 2 minutes? I said, you can't do that with people. I said, this is, I said, you want to run this place like a business? It's not a business as your business is. I said, this is a business of people. And you have to listen to these people. And I said, if you're going to throw them down the drain, you might as well close the doors to your church.
That's right. Well, that is... I really appreciate all the time that you've given me with this interview and all the stories that you've shared. And this will, unless you have something else you'd like to add, that was a great story. I guess this concludes our interview.
Okay.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you.